Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Wade Wegner.
And I'm Nick Harris.
And today we're joined by Saurabh Pant, who is a PM in the Azure Cache team, talking to us today about the Redis Cache.
Yes.
So welcome.
Thanks. Thanks.
So you're not Chris Reisner. What happened there?
No. Well,
welcome back.
Thank you. So I took a 2.5 year hiatus from Microsoft. Kind of explored, did some I think cool stuff.
Yep.
Out in the real world, mm-hmm. built some real apps.
Okay.
Worked with a bunch of customers, and have the pleasure to come back.
Brewed so some beer as well, I hear.
Brewed quite a lot of beer, yes, and consumed a lot of it as well. So,
okay.
So I've joined Microsoft actually this time in the Azure engineering team. So
okay.
I'm on the same team actually as Saurabh on
good
the
to have you, Wade.
Thanks on the Applat team. So, but enough about me. Let's talk about the Azure Redis Cache.
Yeah. So what are we going to see today here?
So I'm here to talk about our Azure Redis Cache.
Okay.
It's a new cache we've introduced to our Azure Cache family.
Okay.
We've had a set of cache offerings based on our on-premise App Fabric cache engine,
mm-hmm.
also codenamed Velocity. That's how you guys might know it.
Yep.
And now we're introducing a new cache family based on the open source Redis cache. It's one step further for Azure in support of open source OLAP. And we are really excited about it.
Okay, that's great. Excellent.
Would it be helpful to maybe just take a real quick look at some of the history? Because there's been quite a number of cache services and caching solutions with Azure over the last 3-4 years, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe just a brief summary of that, just so people know where things stand.
The answer cannot be, I wanted to keep a job, so I kept changing things.
Okay, now I don't know what to say. You took my answer. We've had, I guess, two families of caches now with Redis. Prior to the Redis cache engine, we depended on the App Fabric proprietary Microsoft cache engine.
Right.
That cache engine was available in different forms of hosting. It was available on-premises.
Mm-hmm.
You could just host it yourself on Windows Server. Very popular, a lot of enterprises using it.
Mm-hmm.
It was available in a multi-tenant fashion in what was called the Azure Shared Cache,
mm-hmm.
which has since been deprecated.
Right. Yep.
It was available in a self-hosting mechanism where you could host it on your own worker role.
Right.
And it was also available now as a managed cache offering where Microsoft hosts it for you and you can consume it.
Mm-hmm.
It's in GA, it comes with an SLA. Mm-hmm. So if you're consuming it, good for you. It's a mature product. It's been out for a while. We have a lot of enterprises using it. What we've seen happen in the meantime is we've seen the cache landscape change a bit and Microsoft has evolved a bit. So two things.
Yep.
Redis has come into the cache space and it's transformed the traditional cache engine. So traditionally, caches were key value pairs. You put them in there, you retrieve them. It was simple. Redis is sort of cache plus plus. It takes it in the direction of what you would associate normally with MongoDB, a NoSQL database.
Mm-hmm.
It added features like data structures that you could manipulate as single units. You could perform atomic operations on them. It added features like Lua scripting, transactions,
mm-hmm.
PubSub. So we saw this huge wave of support around Redis. At the same time as Microsoft incorporated more open source frameworks, we saw ask for use of cache in the Azure on non-.NET languages as well.
Yeah.
So it seemed the right time to introduce a new family of caches in Azure based on an open source framework with an ecosystem that works on a wide variety of languages, and that is super feature rich and already has a set of high-scale applications running on it today, like Twitter, Uber, Flickr.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's on Redis today.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of people using it. We were talking about just language support for it and so forth. So big open source community around Redis.
Absolutely. I can even just I had the page open on Redis.io, and if you look at Introduction to Redis, they'll talk about the pieces I talked about.
Yeah.
It talk. You'll see mention of a traditional key-value store, but you'll see data structures, you will see programming languages support that is really broad. Here's their client list that has all the clients that languages they support, and I'll just keep scrolling.
That's great.
And I think it's like 27, 28 languages.
Okay.
So the biggest piece was to get this goodness onto the Azure world as well.
Yep.
So I've got a question. Before we start digging into the Redis cache and how it's working in Azure, one question I would have is, given that there is already a GA caching service, how should people think about when to use the Redis cache versus you know, the existing caching service, the managed cache service, and so forth? Like, no. How would you approach that and advise people?
So, really good question. So, our advice at Microsoft is that if you are starting a new caching solution today, you're new to Azure, you're creating a new project, use Redis Cache.
Okay.
It's in a preview. We are hoping to GA it this year, hopefully in fall of this year. So GA is...
Is there a go live licensing or support at all today?
Not today. We will be bringing that soon as well.
Okay.
Hopefully GA is soon enough, or we'll look into go living it as well. And again, if you have special need and you'd like to go live it, you can reach out to me directly and we can talk. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're starting a new project today, we highly recommend Redis. Again, great feature set coming from the community. Right. And a great set of clients that support it. But that said, if you have existing managed cache offerings and you're happy with those, you can continue using them. It's fully supported. There's no reason to move.
No reason to move. Okay.
Look at Redis. If you really find something you want, you can move. If not, it's a G8 product, full SLA.
Okay.
Excellent.
Cool.
Great.
So what are we going to see?
We introduced this new cache in our new portal. This portal allows you to customize it to your view. So you'll see I have a few caches already pinned here. But for a new customer, you've come to the portal, you want to create a Redis cache. All you need to do is new, Redis cache preview. A new blade opens up. This horizontal UI piece here is known as the blade. All you need to do is choose a name for your cache, and then you can just go with default options that exist here. We'll do Cloud Cover 2 because I created one beforehand. Next is pricing tier. What you see here are two sizes, 250 MB and 1 GB. By the time most of you see this video, you'll see much larger selection of choices here.
Okay.
In a few weeks, we'll have up to 26 GB, and then we are hoping to go even higher than that. Caches up to 26 GB pretty soon. And two SKUs, standard and basic. A basic SKU essentially is a node of cache hosted for you. And a standard one is a master node with a slave node for replication.
Okay.
Right. Redis has a feature of replication where master and slave stay in sync. We host that for you. We set up a master and slave configuration. We keep a heartbeat between slave and master. Right. If master goes down, we detect it, slave comes up. So from a usage perspective, if you're using a standard SKU, you get two nodes. Replication, your availability goes up. And from a pure usage perspective, all you should see is a few seconds blip as the master-slave transition happens, and then things work again.
Okay. So that's really providing the durability, and it's going to eventually allow you guys, when you GA, to have SLAs on top of this.
Exactly. Right? As you say, the SLA coming post-preview, it greatly increases the availability. Larger sizes coming, but you don't see them here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Most of you will have them by the time you play with this. I do want to point out that Redis is still a cache, and this question comes pretty often, is that there are scenarios in Redis where you can do persistence, but it is not a persistent store. It is not a NoSQL database, and there's a lot of Redis material itself that talks to it. And our offering in particular also is positioned as a cache.
Right.
We expect you to use it as an optimization on top of a persistent store. Mm. You have data in table, you want to access it quickly. Cache makes a lot of sense.
So really using some of those cache aside patterns, right?
Exactly.
So instead of hitting the database all the time,
take
a look in the cache. If it's not there, go to the database, grab your data, pull it in, put it in the cache, return it.
Exactly. And we'll later see some demos of some standard scenarios.
So one quick question. So if I come here and I go to build, you know, and create my Redis cache, and I'm not quite sure, or I choose a size that doesn't end up working for me, is there a way to change?
So you definitely can move to a higher size cache.
Okay.
What we don't have today is that as you do that transition, you reset the data and the cache has to be repopulated.
Okay.
Down the line, we'll support migrating transparently as well. We don't have that today.
Okay. So it'll invalidate the data.
It will.
Basically remove
it. It will, yeah. You get a new machine with a new cache provision for
Makes sense.
You have to start from scratch.
Cool. Okay, great.
Yeah. So this was the sizes. There's also a concept of resource groups, which helps you group your resources together. Again, nothing specific to cache there. Locations, we support up to 10 locations. We support all the locations that Azure websites support.
Okay.
Because the common pattern is you have a website talking to a cache,
yep.
The standard client-server model. While we're here, in addition to just hosting Redis, we provide an authenticated endpoint using Redis Auth. So you get a token to talk to your cache. We also have extended Redis to provide an SSL endpoint. So you're not sending your token over clear text. You send it over SSL.
Okay.
The addition that we made to.
So we'll probably get to it, but we'll talk a little bit about how to get the token and some of these things. As
absolutely.
We
let's do that next, actually. Cool. So I've already created a cache, so I won't hit create here. And we'll. Just before the show, I created a cloud cover Redis. There are two things you will need to be able to talk to this cache. Your cache name, which shows up in the properties tab. Mm-hmm. It's cloudcoverredis.redis.cache.windows.net and
keys. Okay.
Keys. So very similar to having worked with storage.
Yep.
You get keys, you get to talk to them, you can regenerate your primary, secondary keys.
And that's the whole point, right? Is this way you can roll your keys over as you want to reset them.
Absolutely.
I can update my service that's communicating with the cache, put the secondary in, roll over the primary, update it.
Exactly.
That way I don't have any downtime. Yep.
Exactly. So this was the server setup. We'll get back to this. Now you need to consume it on the client. This is where that rich ecosystem of client comes in that we talked about earlier. What I have here is a console application. Again, I've just a blank console application. And if you look at the list of clients supported, Redis has a concept of recommended clients. There are two of them with the star for C#. And the smiley face here means there have been active development on them in the last 6 months.
That's great.
ServiceStack.redis. Is a paid offering, mm-hmm. and StackExchange.redis is a free offering, and that's the one we use in most of our demos, but you're free to use or build your own client if you choose to. This is, as the name would suggest, Stack Exchange, the website we all love and use, is a .NET shop using Redis in production today. This is the client they use in production on their application as well. So
very cool.
Heavily battle-tested, every stuff in here.
Yep. Yeah, chances are, if it works for Stack Exchange, it'll work for you.
Oh,
right?
If you work with Stack Exchange, they're performance fanatics, and yes, if it works for them, it should work for you. So, console application, we're trying to consume the cache.
Okay.
I think I have my package manager console. I'll be installing the NuGet package for Stack Exchange from here. You can actually do it through UI as well. It's called StackExchange.redis.
Excellent.
So I'm this package install.
I think it's install
package. Oh, sorry. Yeah. That didn't sound right.
I'm glad to see someone else, though, uses the console instead of right-clicking on the project.
It is pretty addictive once you get used to it.
I this is the only way I do it.
So install package, stackexchange.redis.
Redis,
and you'll see there are two of them now. There's Redis and a strong Redis. This actually came from our community. We put out a stackexchange.redis working with Mark Gravel, and then we heard a lot of asked for a strong name version of it, and Mark was good enough to make that change for us.
Nice.
So there, you install the package. To use it, you
capital A or something, turbo control space or whatever.
I think it was still installing, so.
Yeah, hopefully.
There you go.
Yeah, got it. Trying to get ahead of it. So using stackchain.redis. Now, to connect to the Redis cache, Stack Exchange has a concept of a connection multiplexer.
Okay.
The thought being, for your application, you just create one connection to the cache.
Right.
You maintain it statically, and you can keep using it
mm-hmm.
throughout the application.
That's really good. I'm sure it increases the performance quite a bit. As I recall, with the managed cache service, the creating that connection initially was a fairly expensive operation.
Yeah. So this is it does help. And again, it has full async support for all these commands.
Right.
So connection multiplexer.connect. And all you need to pass in is essentially the host name and the key.
Okay. Right.
What another interesting piece, I'll take a slight divergence, that no matter how much you develop on the cloud, there are scenarios where you need to develop locally, test your cache. Mm-hmm. Maybe, again, this example we threw around, if you're developing on the airplane, you need to do something. For that, it has a really good story as well, Redis, where all you need to do that for now is download an exe, that is the Redis server. I have it here in Redis server.exe. And now you have a
local version of it running.
It's running, yeah, there. Oh, actually, I already had one, so that's why that one failed. Right.
That's great.
I want to connect to it. I just put localhost in here.
Oops.
I have no idea what happened there. But connect.
Nothing that Control Z can't fix. Oh, that's very convenient. Okay. So.
Yeah, so that'll just get you to connect to it. There's also a client which can then connect to this particular server.
Yep.
If you have your server remotely, but you want a local client to do it. I just wanted to point it out because it really helps in development.
Yeah. Is there much difference in terms of parity between the local, you know, the local version of the Redis service?
No, it's exactly the same server.
Exactly the same.
So one thing I should point out here as well is Microsoft has ported Redis onto Windows.
Okay.
So natively supported on Linux. We've ported it onto Windows. There's an MS OpenTech project where you can get on GitHub, where you can get this Windows server, the Windows client. We'll put a link up to it with this video.
Nice. Does it give you the ability to, because you mentioned like in the standard offering, you have a master and a slave.
Yes.
Does the local version let you simulate some of that
so you can do
failover scenarios and see what would happen
if
things go down?
Yes, you can do everything.
It's
the same EAC that runs locally is the one we run on Azure as well. So the only difference between, I guess, Azure on-premises and Azure that we host is that our Azure is a bit locked, our Redis is a bit locked down. Today, for example, we few features we don't expose, and we'll do that either on GA or post GA. Yeah. But beyond that is the same core cache engine.
That's great.
Okay, so now to connect to it on the server, let's just get the two keys we talked about, the host name and the key.
So I may have missed it too. You had typed localhost, and all I would need to do is put localhost there and it would communicate.
Yeah, we could even see that work.
Any ports that need to be opened, or I mean, any other things that need to be done on the machine to support
nothing at all. So this is just communicating within the same machine, so nothing at all.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, great. It's all goodness. So let's complete the example with localhost then, and so you would talk to the localhost. In this case, there's no key because you're just talking to a non-authenticated endpoint. You connect to it, and then you do something called get database. Now, database is just a grouping of similar objects in the cache together. So it's just a logical grouping. It just allows you to break the same physical cache into multiple logical caches if you so desire. If not, you just do get database and use the first one it returns, and that's about it.
Okay.
So here, this will be our
similar to the named cache.
Very similar. Very similar. Yes. Okay. Yeah, named cache. Yes. Okay, a good point to talk about that piece a bit as well. So for people who are used to managed cache, there was a concept of a cluster. You had different machines communicating together, and what named cache did was it guaranteed that that piece of data would stay on the same physical machine. With Redis, it doesn't have clustering per se. Their model is different. It's essentially per instance, and you do the sharding of the data on the client itself. The server instances of Redis never communicate with each other. As things stand today, there is a preview project for Redis clustering that I think will come sometime this summer from Redis itself. But the Redis model today is more the memcache model, where it's a physical machine.
Mm-hmm.
You have your cache on it. If you want multiple machines, you just use a client that intelligently hashes between them.
Got it. Makes sense.
So just want to point it out. So here's our cache. And if I wanted to put some object in there, it would be let's do string set async. And we can do our.
It's nice to see that the library supports async.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
So that's great.
Cloud cover, we'll see. And I mean, just what you would expect from a cache.
Just a simple key value.
I guess there isn't much this app does, but we'll run it. So this should connect to localhost, write the key, be done with it.
Yep.
I guess the good thing to see if there wasn't an exception.
we'll believe you that it's there.
Okay. Well, I can do a little bit more than believe we can. Right. So let's do this. So now, like I mentioned, there's Redis server. There's also Redis client.
Yep.
Here again, since I'm talking to a local host, I just ran it.
Yep.
It automatically connected. Ping pong.
Yep.
So let's do flush all. I don't know what else I had in here. There's no star there. Sorry. So there, it's clean.
Okay.
We'll run this app again quickly. Now we'll do it. And there, you see cloud cover, you say get cloud cover. it is case sensitive. There, hello.
Awesome. That's great.
So you saw the Redis server, you saw the Redis client. Let's talk to our Azure cache.
So real quick question just about the code you wrote. So here you're doing a string set async, right? To add just some name value pairs that are, or key value pairs that are strings. What other objects are supported? Like if you had something more complex, like a CLR type, or you know, some, are you able to add those types of things as well?
So you are able to add them, but the serialization is your responsibility.
Okay.
From a Redis perspective, you just provided something serialized, it'll store it and give it back
to you. And
then
I just deserialize it later.
Exactly. And every client has a different approach to it. Stack Exchange leaves it the flexibility completely up to you. Okay. It does not recommend or force serializer. Okay. Some other clients have serializer built in where you can use those serializers or choose not to.
Okay.
So again, it's you have all the, you have the flexibility.
But as far as Redis is concerned, I mean, it expects you to put strings in there, right?
Yes.
So as long as you just serialize it, you're...
Yeah, Redis will only take serialized data and return that back.
Yep.
And
okay, good, makes sense.
Yes. Okay, so under properties, cache name.
Okay.
And with my instead of localhost now. So you pass in these just as strings. So just one string, you pass in the host name. I'll also pass in SSL equal to true, just to show that we recommend you do it and we support it. And this is an extension that we've done on top of Redis to support SSL. And the next you need is the password. And the password of the key. And now, you have the same thing running against Azure. And not the most glamorous demos, but walk through it. And but the point is that we don't want it to be glamorous. If there's something exciting happening here, we're not doing a job. It should be as simple.
Absolutely,
it should just work. So there, it just talked to it. It wrote "Hello World" to that app, and it's all good.
That's great. Now another question about the code here. You had mentioned how typically with some of these, you'd want to end up creating a static. Like a static iDatabase or something like that, right? So you could do this. We could end up moving that somewhere else so that we didn't have to recreate it each time.
Absolutely. Right? And then when you look at Azure blog, we have a blog there on MVC movie app.
Okay.
That we wrote just to take give an example of using Redis in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And there we follow exactly this pattern. We make this to be static. We also have it so that it detects if the connection breaks for some reason and then transparently reestablishes it. So all that goodness. So again,
very nice.
Okay. And the Azure blog, MVC movie app, and I can put a link up there.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah, that's good to know.
So that was this piece. So far we've created a cache, we've connected to it from a client. Mm-hmm. I did want to talk about a few additional things that Microsoft does for you in addition to just hosting it.
Okay.
So we've taken care of setting up the machine for you, putting Redis in there, opening a port, SSL, auth. In addition to that, there are two other things that I think are really cool about our offering. One is, you get built-in monitoring and alerting.
Very nice.
And this, the goodness of the Azure platform all up, all services have this built-in. So I have an app here called Alerts and Monitoring.
Okay.
And I've been putting some load on it, so we should be seeing some.
So this is another Redis cache that you've already got?
Yes, this is another Redis cache. Right. I already have nothing special about it except that I ran some load. So you see some numbers in here.
It's cool.
But every cache that you open and create, we'll get this data
and
for free.
You don't have to turn this on. It's just, it's there by default.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
That's awesome.
So I clicked on my monitoring tab in here. It opens this up in larger view. I can edit the query that I'm being shown.
Very nice.
So we have a bunch of performance counters we expose. We'll be doing more of these soon before we go generally available. We can.
Yeah, let's look at them
all. I can see past. I don't know if I ran anything in the. Let's keep it today.
Can you talk to us a little bit about some of what these things are that we're monitoring?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are things that you would expect. So I should quickly walk through those. There's cache hits.
Okay.
There are cache misses. Okay. So in this case, I mean, like any application, I've been just pounding it and getting data, and I write the data and read it back. So most of it is there. The way I time it, I get intermittent misses.
Okay.
Just to prove the point that there are misses.
So what's the expiry on something in the cache by default? What options do we have there?
Very good point. I forgot about that. So just quickly jumping back to our, when we did cache.set string set async,
yep.
The way Redis works is the expiry is on a per item basis.
Okay.
So by default, when I just wrote to it, there was no expiry. It right. would never go out of the cache. Hmm. All I need to do is just pass in a third parameter for time span. And I apologize. This laptop is new to me, and I hit this.
Control space.
Yeah. Time span, and let's say from minutes, or the key thing being, okay. you can set an expiry per element,
yeah.
and that's what Redis honors.
Okay. And is there any way to put, if you said it'll be there indefinitely? You purge it. You write to it with a time.
Yeah, you can always call the cache and like do the equivalent of doing a flush all that I did here, right, or you can explicitly remove a particular, delete a particular key.
Okay.
But if you just wanted expiry built in, that's the way to do it.
Yep.
There's also a max memory policy that Redis enforces, and that comes into play when you hit, when you fill up the cache, mm-hmm. and things need to be evicted by Redis.
Yep.
And there again, we support a bunch of options there, and you can choose what you want to get evicted. You can say that
least use.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what you would expect from a typical cache.
Okay.
So cache hits, cache misses, sets and gets. This is where evicted keys comes in.
Yeah.
And evicted keys, for example, what you might want to do is you might want to set an alert in addition to monitoring, where if your cache starts evicting keys, you know something is being filled up. And some eviction might, again, depends on your application pattern. Some eviction might be expected, but if you see, let's say, 100 keys evicted in an hour, you know that my cache is running too hot. I need to upgrade to a larger cache.
Yep.
And that's where alerting comes in. So this is another great feature in addition to monitoring. You can. Eviction, you can, on any of the parameters we expose here, and we'll be adding to this list.
Yep.
So evicted keys greater than 100.
What kind of alerting options does it give, though? Is it just email, or there are other?
So it's, I believe it's just email right now, but then you can. You have options to then set up so that if you have, what I have actually right now is if I get an email, that fires off an alert that, so you can use that emailing to file off different alerts
like
in addition to being
gateway.
Exactly. But today it only offers email. So over the last 15 minutes, if there are 100, we can make this into a alert and have it fire.
Or you could, so there's a used memory as well. So if you had a 250 megabyte cache, you could probably set it to 240. Let me know that I'm getting close to filling up the cache.
Absolutely, yes. I've seen people use both patterns. Some do it purely on memory. Some choose to actually run their cache really hot because they want to use
every megabyte.
So they are fine with running at 250. They just don't want things being evicted.
Fair enough.
So based on your application pattern, you can choose what works. I have a few already set, like eviction greater than 1,000, which was not fired ever because I've never not filled up this cache.
Yep.
I have one, just dummy one, which just fires anytime there are more than 1,000 hits, and I constantly get emails on these. So the thought being, this comes for free. If you were hosting it yourself, which again, we highly encourage, if you want to use Redis, there's something in our service that doesn't work for you, absolutely welcome to host Redis directly on Linux or Windows on Azure. Consume it, absolutely a supported pattern. We have no people who've done it and been successful, but you do get some benefits from a hosted service. Now the next piece, in addition to monitoring and alerting, is high availability, the one we talked about.
Okay.
With the master slave that we set up.
Yep.
I just wanted to go a little bit more into details on what that looks like. Now for that one, what I've done is this is the current Azure portal. We were seeing the preview portal. This is what most of you must be familiar with. Now, here we're going a little bit into the guts of the Redis service that we offer. For every standard cache that you provision, the standard SKU cache, we have two nodes for you. And these are two cloud services nodes that we provision for you in the background.
Okay.
That's what you're seeing here. For your usage, you'll never have to bother about this. I just try to show it to folks to give you, demystify what we're doing with respect to high availability.
Well, that's interesting. So basically, it's showing us that you guys are running these in, did you say cloud service?
Yes.
So like in a worker role?
Yes. So for every Redis is hosted on, you get at least one worker role.
At least one, got it.
And you get two for standard tier. It's not crazy for you to be able to figure out to map it for our A0s are what we use for our 250 MB cache.
Mm-hmm.
A0s, again, are shared infrastructure in cloud services. So those limitations in bandwidth will carry forward to the cache as well.
Sure.
Going beyond 1 GB, it is a dedicated infrastructure, and you get at least one node, if not two.
Excellent. Okay. Oh, that's neat to see.
So this, to the next level, I'll reset this keystone, but.
So you're saying you needn't try to connect to it or do anything?
Exactly. Redis Benchmark is another tool that lets you run perf tests on it.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. So here I'm connecting to this replication thing that I set up, and I was showing you the guts of. So there, we've connected to the cache. Redis has a command saying info, which gives you a bunch of information about your cache.
Okay.
You can do info replication to get information particularly about replication. Yeah. And what you'll notice is there's one master and there's one connected slave.
Okay.
So you do see that there are two nodes. Now,
quick question about that: when you connected, were you connecting via SSL, or this is not using SSL?
This is not using SSL,
right? So probably worth pointing that out. Like,
oh, absolutely, sorry, very good point. Yes, it is. When you're connecting here, you're still sending your token over clear text.
Yep.
What we recommend, and we have a blog post on this as well, is you can use something like SDAML, where when you run the client locally, it is just passing the request via SDAML. So that it goes encrypted to the server. But yes, this goes unencrypted.
I was just going to say, would another usable pattern be to use your primary key in your apps, and then maybe when you use the client, use your secondary?
Because
then once you're done, you can just do a reset on that and not
Absolutely.
Worry so much?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool. Sorry.
So, that's actually a very good point. Thanks for bringing it up. And we are also looking at other ways to make it easier for you to get this goodness in the box. So, be on the lookout. We are exploring some options of having this goodness of Redis CLI in the portal itself.
Okay. On the master slave piece, you said there's a heartbeat that basically monitors when the slave goes down, or master, or vice versa.
Yes.
I imagine it's bidirectional. But what's the delay between writing to master to the slave?
Okay, you set me up perfectly.
Okay,
you set me up perfectly. So let's actually do that.
Okay.
Let's see what happens. So when you notice earlier, I was just connecting directly to this cache, which means I was connecting to a shim, which made sure that you always spoke to the master.
Okay.
Now here again, I'm doing this internal plumbing work, but I'm connecting to these nodes directly. So when I say 13,000 here, I'm connecting to a very specific node among those two, not the shim. And when I do info replication,
and that's through a port, right? So that's through
I'm connecting to the 13,000 port.
Yep.
And then here you see I've connected to the one on 13,000 is the slave. There you go.
Yep.
And in the same way, when I connect to 13,001 and do info replication, that's the master.
Cool.
Okay.
Okay. So now let's connect back. Only thing to remember is 13,001 was the master. Now let's connect back to how we would do it earlier, which was without the port number. So we're connecting to the shim. There we go. I'll go back to, I forgot actually, the one was the master, yes. So what that means is this underscore one here is the master. Let's reboot it.
All right.
So you have an event happening in Azure where your master is getting rebooted. Now it does take a while for when I hit reboot on the portal, it takes a while for it to go through. It does a bunch of cleaning up, but eventually this will reboot. So what you'll notice here is there's a time command, I believe. There, what does that? It just pings the server and gets the time. At some point soon, and I've seen this take from 10 seconds to a minute, the master will go down.
There we go.
Got an error, and now we'll reconnect directly. Here, the reconnection succeeded. So in this time, and I'll do time again. So in this, what was it? In this case, it's 10 seconds.
Yep.
The master went down, connection failed, we reestablished a connection, the slave was, and it took 10 here because we're doing it manually. We've seen it be as low as 4 seconds to 2 seconds to sometimes slightly longer.
Right.
But that's about it. So if you were doing any write operations during those few seconds, you would have just got a failure because the master was down.
Yep.
So for 10 seconds, let's say you were not able to do writes. The worst case scenario is if you had just done a write when the master went down, that might not have got replicated to slave.
Okay.
And when the slave comes up, that will be missing.
Yeah.
We've run this in heavy loads and we do see loss. But it's we need to push it really hard to see data lost in there. And again, this goes to the point of it's a cache, it's not a persistent store, data can be lost.
Right. Now, for like the Stack Exchange library, if this occurs while I've already created an iDatabase, I'm communicating with it, suddenly it goes down and you get this failure. I'm assuming we're going to have to handle it in code and do some retries.
So again, every lab, absolutely. Again, every library does it differently.
Right.
The Stack Exchange has a pattern around it. And again, our MVC app, movie app shows some of that. But some are more aggressive in reestablishing themselves. Some will try and give an exception, letting the application make the choice. Again, it's completely an application pattern.
So when you say it has a, so it's got a pattern around it, you're saying that the library doesn't have a retry policy mechanism built into it, and you just write it yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So Stack Exchange has does have some retry policy built into it, and you can modify it and control it as you like.
Okay.
And just to re-show this, it's when we connected to 3001 now, which was earlier the master, it's now the slave.
Cool. Now, at some point when the machine reboots, will the service kind of reconcile these things, and will it eventually make the master again?
No. So what will happen?
It'll keep it at...
They just keep alternating.
Okay.
So what happens now is when this the new node comes up absolutely clean, it what used to be the master now becomes a slave, it resyncs, comes up to speed, and the next time an event happens, it'll become master. So this is what I had from a service perspective. Just I know we went through a lot of stuff quick, but this was... From a service perspective, I did want to talk a little bit more about just patterns that we see people using cache with. And again, I'll touch on these patterns. I'll send links to maybe more details that people want to investigate and get code and go to the next level on these. So I have two demos set up here, two patterns that I'd like to talk about. In this case, what we're doing is you have a Azure storage table that has the customer data. The larger pattern being you have data in a table, which naturally has a primary row and a secondary key in there. But it doesn't.
Partition key and row key.
Sorry.
No secondary keys.
So you have a partition key and a row key in there, and you don't have a secondary key. And you could use Redis cache to sort of become that secondary index. So in this case, you have customer data in there, and this customer data is by customer ID. But you'd also like to be able to query it by customer name. So what we do in this case is we create a Redis cache that just holds the customer names and an index to the table where that entry comes from. So the scenario would be if you wanted data on a particular name, you would go to Redis first, get the exact key, row, and then go and get the data from table. You're doing two gets here, but that's still much faster than doing a secondary index search on top of table, where the primary index is not what you're looking for. And you can essentially take every field that you have in table and make a Redis index off top of it, so that it's not only, so all the columns that you have that you potentially might search for, customer name, customer employment, customer, any column that you have in the customer table, you can put that in Redis as a secondary index. It takes, I have 1 million records in table here, and I think that the cache was some 20K. So it's pretty small. You can pretty much index the hell out of everything. It was great essentially for static data. If things move, if entries are being added very quickly to your table, you do have to do the work of keeping the two in sync. But otherwise, the pattern works really well. So that was one pattern I want to talk about. Okay, so what I have here is the same project where it's just the secondary index on top of table. I'll just run, I might even have it running on websites directly. We won't even have to run it locally. Oh, there it is. So, so what I have here is an application which queries Redis cache, gets an index, talks to table. So what this lets me do is now even stuff like this, where I'm looking for a particular customer, I can type in their name, and I can even give you autocomplete, because they're just coming from the Redis cache. I have the names in there already, and these are actually a million entries, but it still gives you a reasonable response because this is just coming from the cache, it's in memory. And if I choose one of these, and I ping and get the data, here it took 208 milliseconds, this is the full ping. Like this is not only the time to get it from the cache, but the .NET app to, I guess, warm itself up. So I do it the second time, it's only 44 milliseconds. And now I'll be in that ballpark.
Right, but you're getting additional information like balance. So are you also going to table?
So
you're doing the cache in order to look up the row the row identifier.
And then I'm going to table and getting the actual data.
Absolutely. That together is 52 milliseconds.
Yes. And if I was doing a direct table search where I was actually doing one less operation but going but a more expensive operation, and it's still going. It takes a while. It is 1 million entries, slower the first time as things get loaded.
It's a great demo. It really demonstrates the advantage of being able to have that Redis cache there to do that first lookup.
Absolutely, yeah.
So this code that you're running here, is that available publicly at the moment?
It should be. I'll make sure it's available publicly, and I'll add a link to the video so customers have it. So
really, quick question. So when you're hitting the cache, we talked about resource group earlier, right?
Yes.
And one of the reasons that's important is I would expect, or I'm guessing, that one of the most expensive parts of this is actually the network the network hop to hit.
Yeah. So I think the point you're getting to, which is I should have mentioned again, is all the latency we talk about only makes sense if you're talking to cache in the same region.
Right.
Yeah. So you could have different resource groups. As long as you have it in the same region. So if you have your website in North Central US, you want your cache right there, next to it.
Yep.
And because it relies heavily on Azure networking to give you the benefits of these two nodes talking to each other. So absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
This only makes sense if you're doing it within the same region. There are certain usage scenarios where you might want to go cross-region, but you're seeing a great many-fold increase in latency. It might still be better than going to persistent storage, and that's why people sometimes use cache cross-regions as well. But
I'll just wait until people start asking to have their slave running in a different regional data center.
That's actually not crazy. I know people do it as well, just from so again, we have it on our radar.
Yeah.
But people.
It's an interesting scenario, right? Because you see that secondary. I think it was in a read-only mode, right?
Yep.
So you may not be writing to it, but you could end up being query from it. So
absolutely.
People will ask.
So what I have here is we had the customer.
Yep.
What we've done here is in customer was more of a typical cache scenario. We just put key-value pairs, and then we put key-value pairs in the cache as well. With Redis, you have the strength of data structures. So what we've done with products now is that it's, again, the same. You have 1 million records. Right. The records are broken down by category. I think I have 50 categories, so it's 1/50th of a million. But when we had the indexes in Redis, this time we've sorted them. So they're in a sorted list.
Right.
And that gives you some other additional capability, where now I can say, just give me the top 100 elements, and these would have been way more expensive to do, being able to get the top 100. Think of a leaderboard scenario.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's much, much easier to do that once you are using a data structure in Redis. Now, here the data
is different, too.
Yeah. And you'll notice the difference is still high. It's a little less, the factor by which Redis is faster, a little less higher, just because from 1 million we've gone to 1/50th of that. So as your data gets smaller, secondary indexes, search, and tables start getting closer to cache. But it's still significant.
Six to seven times faster.
Exactly. So it's still significant, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the thing is, you can do the goodness of cache, but you can also do advanced scenarios by sorting it, which makes it much more powerful. Okay, one pattern. I will show you another pattern, which is, and this pattern is around PubSub. So in addition, like I said, Redis takes cache and then does the plus plus on it. And one of those plus plus is PubSub. It is a great low reliability, but high latency, low latency and low reliability PubSub model.
Okay.
It's not a replacement for a scenario where you absolutely do not want to lose any PubSub messages.
Right.
But for a scenario where you quickly want to be informed when something changes and are fine with a few messages being missed, Redis does a great job. One example of using it is in conjunction with SignalR. So we have a scenario here where the typical SignalR scenario, you have browsers connecting to a web server with SignalR, and then SignalR will normally just send the data back to multiple browsers that connect, but only to the same web server.
Mm-hmm.
What if you have multi-instances of the web server? How do you scale SignalR beyond that? And that's where the Redis backplane comes in. All you need to do is add the NuGet package for the Redis backplane to SignalR, which has existed for a while. Just put it in place, and now point it to our Azure Redis cache. And now you have multiple browsers communicating across different servers using the same SignalR backplane.
Right, okay.
So let's Let's see what that looks like.
Yeah, so that's a great way to make sure that the data that all these different web servers have now is consistent, right?
If absolutely.
It's updated, yeah. Now you're returning it back from the same source.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one common pattern we've had people ask is Redis has a feature where anytime you add an item to a list, it will broadcast a message, and then people can hear on it and know something got added. So this pops up capability really helps to keep items in the cache in sync across multiple clients.
Yeah, that's great.
So here's the Fireworks demo. Again, we'll put this up for folks to play with, but it's just a SignalR demo that people must have seen before. The only difference here is we added a NuGet package, microsoft.asp.net.signalr.redis,
right.
And then in the startup code, we have on Owen startup, we have fireworks.startup, and then we have the dependency resolver having used Redis, and I put in my Azure cache it talks to,
mm-hmm.
and here's the
channel
they're subscribing to, exactly, sorry, Fireworks. Yep. So that's all it needs. And so here we have the app running connected to local, it's running locally but talking to the Azure service.
Right.
And then I have a similar service running on, maybe I don't, we'll run it. Fireworks, Redis.azure websites.net, so it's connected to the same backend Redis channel.
Right.
And we'll wait for it to connect. Yeah, so here we have a website connecting to the same channel on Redis. So one running localhost, and again,
it's awesome.
The goodness of SignalR with the backplane in Redis,
yep.
giving it the distribution across multiple servers.
Okay. So just an aside comment. So a few years ago at Build, we ended up showing this fantastic app game called Tangster. Do you remember this, Nick?
Yeah, I remember.
And used all kinds of different things to communicate across browsers and stuff. And this would have saved us a lot of time.
So absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It is. It's just interesting to see where caches have evolved. And this is not something you would associate with the cache even a few years back. And we have a lot of more tools now. Yeah,
that's great.
Excellent.
Well, that's all I had.
Awesome.
Just a quick breeze through a lot of stuff.
Well, this is great. Well, I've got about 2.5 years of catch-up to do around Azure, so a little bit of it now has been filled in, so I appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining the show, and hopefully we can get some links to those samples. You'll find them down the bottom.
Absolutely.
As well as some links to the sites which you referred to earlier. Apart from that, how do people get in contact with you if they've got a question or say that they wanted a supported instance of the
you can my alias we'll put our alias on there. You can reach out to me. We also have azurecache@microsoft.com.
okay. Get some editing.
Okay. azurecache@microsoft.com. You email us and we'll respond back to you. Again, forums, we track them actively as well, so reach out and we'll get to you.
Okay. And are you on Twitter in case people want to follow you to see you know what's happening? And
At Saurabh Pant. Do this.
There we go.
At Saurabh Pant, you can find me there as well. Absolutely.
Okay. And yours, Wade?
Oh, yep. I'm on the Twitters at Wade Wagner. So.
Okay. Excellent. Ta-da. Okay. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.